Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this program is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, but let's start with an article from the Essential Retirement Guide magazine. This one is entitled, Maintaining a Rewarding Social Life, Staying Socially Engaged in Retirement is Linked with Better Health and Makes Retirement More Fun. For many people, retirement marks the beginning of a blank calendar. And instead of invoking a sense of freedom, the lack of obligations may bring on a sense of isolation. Those feelings can even be intensified if your mobility is limited or during times of crises such as the recent coronavirus pandemic. Staying socially connected and engaged in your community is critical to healthy aging. Research shows that people with strong relationships stay mentally sharp longer than their peers, staving off depression, loneliness, and cognitive decline. Believe it or not, strong social ties are not only associated with better brain health, but also better physical health. Here are some ways to build and maintain a strong social life in retirement. Reconnect with family and friends. There are many ways to stay in touch, even across distance. You can call, email, or send a card to your loved ones. You can also take advantage of apps such as Skype and FaceTime that allow for video chats and online group hangouts, which are a great way to connect with loved ones when visiting isn't an option. And stay in touch with your favorite former coworkers. Though you no longer work together, it doesn't mean long-standing friendships should end. Keep moving. An active lifestyle can help you stay well both physically and mentally. While there are plenty of ways to exercise solo, having a workout buddy or group can help keep you motivated. Check out a local hiking trail where you can walk or go for a bike ride with a friend. If you're able, you can also try a group class in dance, yoga, or tai chi. Whatever you choose, getting active is a great way to find a group. You can enroll in a class. Taking a course puts you in direct contact with instructors, classmates, and subjects that interest you. Peruse your local community college catalog. Check out senior center offerings, or consider auditing a class at a nearby university. Many colleges and organizations offer a variety of online courses, which are a great way to stay engaged, even if physical attendance isn't a convenient option. Lend a hand. Research has found that senior volunteers experience decreased anxiety, depression, and loneliness after 1 year of their volunteer service. At the same time, volunteering typically boosts seniors' feelings of increased life satisfaction. Support a cause that's important to you, or do it just for fun. Donating your time can make a big difference, especially for organizations struggling with small budgets. It can also have a big impact on your own well-being, whether you're helping your local library, hospital, nature preserve, or museum. Get creative. The arts offer many opportunities for meeting new friends. Studies also show that older people who engage with the arts experience greater physical and mental wellness and slower functional declines than those who don't. Consider taking art classes or music lessons or joining a writing group. Many teachers will even offer lessons online so you can meet up virtually. Focus on your spiritual life. Attending religious services or participating in a spiritual group can provide a meaningful way to connect with others and a link to even more social activities, such as community service days, potluck dinners, and study groups. There are many ways to add meaning and social connection to your retired life. And no matter how you reach out, you're likely to find others who will welcome you into the fold. Now let's look at an interview with Carol Burnett, and this is from the AARP magazine. Carol Burnett, the queen of comedy on sorrow and laughter, her mama and Osama. What cabin fever? My heart goes out to people who are ill or lost their job. It's just mind-boggling. So I can't complain. I'm safe. I've got my husband at home, a home, and food on the table. We do crossword puzzles and play Scrabble and watch old movies. But I miss seeing my kids, my grandchildren, and my friends. And when all this is over, I just want to throw a great big hugging party. Define tough. Many people say I had a tough childhood. It wasn't that tough. We were poor, but I was never hungry. My mama and dad were alcoholics, and they were divorced. But I had my grandmother, and she raised me. We had one room. I slept on the couch until I was 21. Nanny was on the Murphy bed. She was funny. She used to look under the bed every night. I would say, "What are you looking for, Nanny?" And she would say, "Randolph Scott." Here I come, eventually. Growing up in Los Angeles, we would fly kites and roller skate and play Jungle Girl. I taught myself the Tarzan yell when I was about 9. I was also editor of my high school paper. My intent was to go to UCLA and major in journalism, but we didn't have the money. Tuition was $43. One morning, I got a letter. Inside was a $50 bill. I don't know to this day who sent that. Patience, patience. When I went to New York, I was auditioning for something, and I thought I had it. But another girl got it. Instead of being discouraged, I thought, it's her turn. It's not my turn. My turn will come. It saved me from being disappointed. Paying forward. If someone had told me 52 years ago that our little show, the Carol Burnett Show, would be viable today, I would have said, you're crazy. But it has held up because we were never that topical. We just went for the laugh. Choose happiness. My daughter, Carrie, got into drugs. In that situation, don't be their best friend. When we got her into a third rehab, oh, she hated my guts. You have to love them enough to let them hate you. She got sober before her 18th birthday, and we had a good 20 years. We were joined at the hip for a while there. Carrie died of cancer at 38, but in the hospital she said, every day I wake up and decide, today I'm going to love my life. And that was her mantra. Divine inspiration. Before the pandemic, I did shows where the audience asked questions. About 10 years ago in Texas, a lady said, if you could be a member of the opposite sex for 24 hours, who would you be and what would you do? And I said, a little prayer. Oh, God, whatever comes out of my mouth is going to be your fault. And out tumbled, I would be Osama bin Laden, and I would kill myself. The audience went nuts. And finally, don't forget to laugh. I've lost a lot of people. Tim Conway and Lyle Waggoner and Ken Berry and just the last couple of years. You learn to cope and also to live in the now. And you have to laugh. And this was an interview with Carol Burnett as told to Alana Nash. And now continuing with AARP, the magazine, Healthy You, a guardian angel in your pocket. 8 smartphone apps to make life safer. Be safe. That's the letter B, S-A-F-E. This voice-activated SOS system Send your location to your selected contacts and automatically streams and records emergency video. Features a built-in siren. It's Android and iOS, and it's free. Cairn, C-A-I-R-N, a safety app for hikes that shares your planned route with loved ones. It also calculates your estimated time of arrival based on your speed and elevation change for thousands of popular trails. Cairn allows you to download maps that point out where cell service is available, even when you're off the grid. And that also is Android and iOS and is free. Dark Sky Weather provides hyper-local weather info for the next hour. Don't get caught in a storm. This is iOS. It's $3.99 for a lifetime. First Aid by American Red Cross contains valuable information on what to do in any common first aid emergency. Also, download free Red Cross apps for emergency weather alerts and expert advice for tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, and floods. That's Android and iOS, and it's free. MediSafe Medication Reminder. Get reminders on your phone for when to take your medication or supplements and when your supplies are running low. Caregivers get real-time missed medication alerts. The app also warns of potentially dangerous drug interactions. And that one is also Android and iOS and is free. ICE, I-C-E, medical standard. It's like a medical alert bracelet on your smartphone's lock screen display, informing first responders of your conditions, allergies, medications, and emergency medical contact information. That is also available in Android, iOS, and is free. Noon Light silently calls for help to your exact location with the tap of a button. A trained operator at Noon Light's monitoring center will text and call you to verify the alarm. If you can't talk or don't respond, Noon sends a 911 alert, including GPS location, profile information, and even a picture of you. That is Android, iOS, and free. And finally, Snug Safety. Made for people who live alone, this app checks on you at a time of day you select. You press a green check mark on the app and receive a quote of the day. If you fail to check in, your emergency contacts will be called. And that is also Android, iOS, and free. Now, how about a little good news? This is also from AARP Magazine. It's valid to be concerned about your future finances and security, but the outlook might be sunnier than you think. And this is an article by Kimberly Lankford. It may seem as if we're living through an unprecedented time of multifaceted challenges. We have the COVID-19 pandemic. We have the near shutdown of the economy and its ripple effects on jobs, savings, and the ability to pay for basic needs. Racial tensions. An election season like none other. Of course, this was written before this past weekend. All of these developments add up to extraordinary uncertainty, and hardly anything unsettles prognosticators, decision makers, and the rest of us as much as uncertainty. But there's reason for optimism. Look to the past and you can see that societies and economies recover from traumas such as these. The following facts can put today's hard financial times into historical perspective and maybe even put you at ease. The economy. If you are worried that the U.S. economy will never recover, know that the 1918 influenza epidemic left almost no discernible mark on the aggregate U.S. economy, according to a recent paper. The Spanish flu's impact on the economy was mostly modest and temporary, report co-authors Carola Friedman, and Ephraim Benmelek, professors at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. The Dow Jones Industrial Average increased by 10.5% in 1918 and 30.5% in 1919. The economy even expanded modestly in 1919 as a result of war-related industry activity. While conditions are different today, the co-authors point out that a global pandemic does not inevitably lead to a grave economic recession or depression. If your gut tells you that things will only get worse, know that your gut is a terrible economic forecaster. When the University of Michigan's decades-old index of consumer sentiment hit bottom during the Great Recession, that measure of consumer confidence was at its lowest point in 28 years. But only 4 months later, the economy began its longest expansion in modern U.S. history. If you are worried that so many neighborhood businesses are closing, know that two-thirds of small businesses started between 1994 and 2009 and shut down within 10 years. Think the economy is undergoing a vast die-out? It's just business as usual, so to speak. That surprisingly high rate of small business shutdowns has changed little over time, according to the Small Business Administration. In April 2020, study by the National Bureau of Economic Research showed that 41.4% of businesses had temporarily closed because of COVID-19. Only 1.8% were permanently closed because of the pandemic. Overall, more than 90% of business owners thought it was at least somewhat likely that they would be open on December 31st, 2020. If you are worried that so many big companies are going out of business, know that only 63% of companies that started trading publicly between 2000 and 2009 survived for 5 years. Even before COVID-19, large companies have been opening and closing at a fast pace. Most new ones need to rely more on intangible assets such as databases and proprietary algorithms, notes a 2016 paper by two business school professors. These idea-based companies can become global players relatively quickly, but they can fail quickly too, says co-author Anoop Srivastava, an accounting professor at the University of Calgary in Alberta. Tech companies aren't the only ones at risk of being displaced by younger competitors. Think of Blockbuster giving way to Netflix, or the disappearance of Woolworths as Walmart grew. Srivastava adds that the number of publicly traded companies in the U.S. fell from about 7,500 in 1997 to 4,000 by early 2020, even while unemployment was down and the economy was growing. Your money. If you are worried that your retirement savings will never recover, know that Fidelity Investments 401k customers who stayed in the market during the 2008 downturn saw their account balances rise an average from $79,000 that year to $360,000 by the end of 2019. Although people who got out of stock funds in 2008 re-entered the market and continued to save, their average balance performed worse, per Fidelity, rising to only $276,000 by 2019. Saving for retirement is a marathon, not a sprint, said Eliza Badeau, Fidelity's Director of Workplace Investing. It's important to maintain a long-term approach and not make changes based on short-term events, she explains. Consistently contributing to your savings, maintaining the right balance of stocks, bonds, and cash, and avoiding tapping your savings unless absolutely necessary are some of the key aspects to keep your savings on track. If you are worried that your home's value is at risk of collapsing, know that housing prices have been at or near all-time highs since November 2016, according to Chase Shiller Index, despite the housing meltdown of 8 years earlier. This widely followed measure of U.S. home prices, co-created by Nobel laureate Robert Shiller, hit a then-record high in 2007, just before the housing bubble burst. Declining for the next 5 years, the index looked unlikely to recover. But after falling 26% from its peak, it began marching back up in 2012. And by February of 2020, it had surpassed its pre-bust high by 16.6%. Chris DeRitis, a deputy chief economist at Moody's Analytics, expects home prices to decline modestly this year and fall in 2021 as the government's support to households and small businesses expire and the foreclosure moratorium ends. Despite these negative forces, the lower and mid-tier segments of the housing market should recover reasonably well, given demand, he notes. Your career. If you are worried that you've lost your job or you think you might lose it, know that in the months after the Great Recession, the peak unemployment rate for workers 55 and older was 26% lower than for the overall population. In good times and bad, the jobless rate for older workers tends to be lower than for all workers in the wake of the downturn a decade ago. Unemployment peaked at 10% overall, but at 7.4% for workers 55 plus. Even though the jobless rate for older people, those 55 and older, was 11.8% in May of 2020, it was still slightly lower than the overall rate. After the Great Recession, it did take some workers in their 50s and 60s longer than younger workers to find a job, points out Catherine Collinson, CEO of the nonprofit Transamerican Center for Retirement Studies. Some people gave up, but don't give up, she says. Things will improve. After the Great Recession, she adds, surveys found that people who accepted some job after being laid off, even if they were underemployed, tended to fare better in the long run than did those who remained unemployed. Maybe they took a job that was beneath their skills and experience, she said, but by virtue of bringing in income and staying in the workforce, that helped them financially and helped them improve their prospects when the employment market picked back up. If you're worried that nobody will hire you, know that people founding a business at age 50 are nearly twice as likely to succeed as those who are 30. A recent study by MIT and Northwestern University professors and a U.S. Census Bureau economist showed that the most successful entrepreneurs are middle-aged and older, primarily because of their experience, industry knowledge, financial resources, and social networks. Chances of success, defined as a sale of the business or a public stock offering, increased with age until 60. An increasing number of people over 50 will shift careers or start their own business. That is exactly what's happened after 9/11 and during the Great Recession, said Carrie Hannon, a career strategist and the author of Never Too Old to Get Rich, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Starting a Business Midlife. In fact, the percentage of new entrepreneurs who were ages 55 to 64 grew from 14.8% in 1996 to 25.8% in 2018. Reports the Ewing Mering Kaufman Foundation. This kind of life event that we are currently experiencing can be a huge motivator to try something new, Hannon notes. Your life. If you are worried that you won't ever feel safe enough to go to the theater or a museum, know that from late 1592 to early 1594, the bubonic plague killed more than 10,000 people living in London. It's a fascinating bit of history. In the midst of William Shakespeare's career, all of London's theaters were shuttered for over a year in an effort to halt the plague's spread. But when theaters, including Shakespeare's Globe, reopened, gate receipts were huge, according to James Shapiro, an English professor at Columbia University and author of Shakespeare and the Divided America. Soon afterward, Shakespeare wrote Romeo and Juliet and A Midsummer Night's Dream, and he continued to write plays through a second wave of the plague in 1603, completing King Lear and Macbeth a few years later. If Shakespeare's age differs any model and consolation, or offers any model and consolation, it's how quickly numbers were back to normal and people were living their lives again, Shapiro observes. Cities bounce back and people crave theater. If you are worried that you'll never be happy again, know that during December 2008, 80% of Americans said they were satisfied with how things were going in their personal life at the time. How you feel about life isn't always ruled by the economy and current events. Even during the worst of the Great Recession, 47% of people polled by Gallup said they were very satisfied with their life, and another 33% were somewhat satisfied. Recent polls, mostly conducted before the death of George Floyd, showed mixed results. 72% of people surveyed by Gallup from late April to early May said they had experienced feelings of happiness a lot the previous day, up from 67% 1 month earlier. A survey conducted in late May by the University of Chicago's NORC found a sharp decline in people who said they were very happy, but an increase to over 60% in the share of Americans who said they were pretty happy. The key to finding happiness during this time is not through social distancing, but rather through distance socializing. The authors of the World Happiness Report 2020, an annual survey of global happiness, wrote on March 23rd, when cities around the world were shutting down, remaining socially connected with friends, colleagues, and family is crucial in finding happiness during this public health crisis. And this was by Kimberly Lankford, a longtime columnist at Kiplinger's Personal Finance. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.